progress will always come from Demos, from we the people.
Greece has made a tremendous comeback. We've worked with them very closely.
The United States recognizes only one legitimate government of the Republic of Cyprus.
Nothing can break the spirit of the Greek people.
Long live the friendship between Greece and the United States of America. Ευχαριστώ. Thank you very much.
I'm Thanos Davelis, and this is The Greek Current. This week, Erdogan said Turkey had entered a new juncture in the Kurdish peace process, signaling he was open to the idea of jailed PKK leader Abdullah Öcalan addressing lawmakers. In another startling move, he also suggested that he was open to the release of the jailed Kurdish politician Selahattin Demirtas. Liesl Hinz, assistant professor of international relations at Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies and an expert on Turkey, joins me to break down what these steps could mean for the Kurdish peace process. Liesl, great to have you back on The Greek Current.
Thanks so much, Thanos. Great to be here.
Liesl, just how important, or I guess groundbreaking, would it be to let Öcalan address Turkish lawmakers?
So I think this would be a huge, huge step. I think this would have been considered by a lot of both individuals in the political process in Turkey and also observers as a red line previously. Erdogan, I think as recently as January, had sort of called Öcalan a baby killer and said that, no, we're not going to sort of have any kind of serious negotiation with him. But I mean, it seems as though if this does happen, that it would really be a significant shift. Now, I think that Erdogan's use of the term sort of we're at this new juncture, I sort of question what that means in terms of what steps have actually been taken on the government side. We've seen a number of steps being taken on the Kurdistan Workers Party, on the PKK, with the sort of symbolic burning of arms over the summer, with the declaration of, you know, pulling militants out of Turkish territory. But in terms of steps by the government, we haven't really seen anything concrete. We've seen ideas floated, and that's very much what we saw with Erdogan's comment earlier this week.
So what remains to be done on the Kurdish peace process front, Liesl? Because like you said, it's difficult to discern what the government is really doing here.
Yeah. Well, it's tough to know what needs to be done because I think the different sides have different expectations of each other. And even on the, say, Ankara side, I think there's a lot of potential, not hardcore divisions, but potential disagreements in terms of what's acceptable. And then I think also on the Kurdish side, there are some divisions and some conflicting interests there as well. But certainly, I think what needs to happen for those who are part of the Kurdish delegation is that there do need to be concrete steps taken by the government, because the government understands this as a, you know, they call it quote unquote terror-free Turkey, that's what they're pushing for. And on the Kurdish side, you know, they're very much pushing for things like cultural rights, potentially some kind of democratic autonomy, some kind of political change, not just the sort of cease of the conflict and disarmament and all that stuff. That's very much what Ankara is looking for, is disarmament. And so I think there are different expectations on each side. But what I think is clear is that the government, again, hasn't really taken clear steps. So one could be the release of Selahattin Demirtas, for example, which was also floated. And again, I think we've seen comments coming from both Erdogan and from Devlet Bahçeli in the last couple of days that we wouldn't have expected. We can maybe talk about why that's happening now. But I think there needs to be a recognition of how many thousands of Kurdish individuals are in jail, certainly not just the high profile ones, but other political representatives, how many mayors were removed and replaced with government trustees. So there's a tremendous amount of sort of addressing the political crackdown that happened against the Kurdish movement that needs to happen on the government side, in addition to more formal moves like, you know, institutionalizing cultural rights and things like that.
Well, Liesl, let's get into the timing and why this is happening now, because you mentioned comments by Erdogan and his nationalist ally, Devlet Bahçeli, who reportedly said that it would be beneficial for Turkey to release Selahattin Demirtas. What's behind this shift?
So this is, again, really interesting. One of those things that maybe a year ago I would have said, you know, that's a red line. I can't imagine Devlet Bahçeli saying something like that. But looking at the timing, we know that on Monday, the European Court of Human Rights denied Turkey's appeal against its decision that Selahattin Demirtas needs to be released, right? So the ECHR in July, as one of, I think, three consecutive rulings, has said that Selahattin Demirtas, the former co-chair of the People's Democratic Party, kind of the, you know, previous installation of the current Dem Party, had the ECHR said that his detention, his incarceration is unjust, and this is clearly on political grounds. Now, Turkey has ignored those rulings in the past and potentially could have ignored this one. In fact, in October, Turkey, at the last minute, submitted its appeal against the ACHR ruling. It's sort of a, you know, at the very last deadline, they submitted their appeal. And that sort of looked like a blow to the peace process, potentially. Now, so we have the rejection of that appeal on Monday. And then this week, we have Erdogan and Bahçeli kind of both floating the idea that Demirtas might be released. And as you said, Bahçeli saying that this would be something that could be beneficial to Turkey. So a couple of things to point out here. I think one is that if he is released, and that is a big, big if, some people were saying that maybe even last night, you know, right after those comments, this could potentially happen. What Erdogan said was that we're going to leave this in the judiciary's hands. Now, we can question the independence of the judiciary, and we should question the independence of the judiciary. But his comment is important, and it's been repeated in pro-government media, because if I would assume that if Demirtas is released, Erdogan can sort of say, well, that was the judiciary, right? That was their ruling, their decision to do so. It wasn't my call. Also, the ECHR gives it sort of convenient timing. Look, we are complying with what international institutions are telling us to do. So, hey, EU, stop yelling at us for saying that we're not complying with your institutions, with European institutions. So I think if, and again, it's a big if he were released, the timing has to do with potentially the ECHR ruling, giving them some space to be able to do so and say, well, look, we're just in compliance with this international institution. And that they can say, well, it's also the judiciary that makes the decision. And I think that this is best understood not as, you know, again, complying with human rights and taking a step towards democracy, but rather giving the Dem delegation some kind of concession, some kind of win, some kind of signal that you need to stay committed to this process because, look, we've done this major thing. So that's sort of how I read their suggestions that he might be released.
What do you think this tells us about the reasons that Demirtas has spent almost 10 years in jail now?
Yeah, so he and others, including Figen Yüksekdağ and other key members of the Kurdish political movement, have been in jail since 2016. So they recently celebrated an anniversary. And I think that the reason that they are in jail, ostensibly going all the way back to the 2014 Kobani protests, so they're blamed for somehow inciting violence in those protests. They've been charged with, of course, you know, the typical brush of affiliation with terrorism, support of terrorism, those kinds of things. The charges that so many Kurdish politicians have been kind of painted with, that terrorism brush. I think the real reason that Demirtas in particular is in jail is that he's a gigantic political threat to Erdogan. He ran against them in the 2018 presidential elections. He ran from his jail cell. And he ran a pretty, you know, a pretty powerful campaign in which a lot of people were pointing to him as a charismatic leader who can bring a lot of people on the left to his side, including not only Kurdish individuals, but Turkish individuals who are looking for a sort of more democratic socialist sort of approach to Turkish politics. And so I think that we can understand his prolonged incarceration because he's a major threat. I think this also helps us understand why Ekrem İmamoğlu, who was arrested in March and who was sort of Erdogan's current main political rival, is not only in jail, but is facing new charges, right? New cases against him. So when we're thinking about political leaders, political figures who are in jail, I think we really need to think about the extent to which they might be able to rally an opposition against Erdogan.
We talked about Erdogan's ally, Devlet Bahçeli, for a bit. And, you know, it seems to be that he is the one that's floating ideas or taking the first steps in this Kurdish peace process all the way from the beginning. And this week with his comments as well that Erdogan followed up on. Is he the one to watch in this process?
That's a really good question. I think he's the one to watch. I don't think he's the one who's leading the process. My sort of understanding of Devlet Bahçeli for years now has been that he's kind of the one making public calls that Erdogan maybe wants to be made, but doesn't want to be the one that does that. So Bahçeli has, you know, he's called for early elections. He's the one who, you know, made this, again, a year previously, one wouldn't have expected it, but the last October sort of said, well, maybe Öcalan should come to the parliament, and essentially initiates the public discussion around what has now become the peace process. And I'm sure a lot of people might disagree with this, but, you know, thinking that maybe Erdogan and Bahçeli had some kind of split. Every, you know, there's always talk of some split. Oh, there's a split between Fidan and Ibrahim Kalin, right? There's a split between the son-in-laws. There's always some kind of, you know, palace intrigue that we're talking about when it comes to Turkish politics. But my understanding, having observed Bahçeli over the years, is that I feel as though he is kind of tasked with floating ideas and sort of taking the lead, seeing how the public reacts, potentially, and this would just be my take, potentially being the fall guy or the scapegoat if something goes wrong. And then it's not Erdogan who was calling for this, but he can sort of put the blame on Bahçeli, potentially. That's sort of how I understand their relationship. Again, I'm sure some might disagree, but just kind of having observed the dynamics and understanding how much control Erdogan holds over so many political channels and decisions, it would be very surprising to me to think that Bahçeli kind of goes rogue and then Erdogan goes along with it. That just doesn't kind of compute in my mind.
Liesl, it'll be exciting to see how all of this unfolds. Thanks for joining us again.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure, Thanos.
Taking us to our headlines for the day, the signing of an offshore gas exploration deal between ExxonMobil, Energean, and Hellenic Energy during the U.S.-Greece Partnership for Transatlantic Energy Cooperation meetings in Athens is seen as a vote of confidence in Greece's prospects as a key regional energy player. This is Greece's first offshore gas exploration agreement in four decades. Energy Secretary Chris Wright and Secretary of the Interior Doug Burgum met Prime Minister Mitsotakis in Athens ahead of the signing. Finally, Turkey has flatly denied reports that its purchase of 20 Eurofighter aircraft comes with restrictions preventing their use against NATO allies like Greece, despite German assurances to the contrary. The sale by a multinational consortium, including the United Kingdom, Germany, Italy, and Spain, has sparked controversy, with German sources suggesting conditions would prevent the jets' use against allies. That wraps up today's episode of The Greek Current. Thanks for tuning in.